Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. My name's Andy Warren and I'm joined by a man who is slowly but surely developing an addiction to extra strong mints, Stuart Watson.
Good morning. Yeah, thanks to you. You're sort of pushing and peddling them my way at the moment, so I feel like you're a drug dealer pushing extra strong mints my way and I'm becoming dependent on them by the
day.
They're
nice though, aren't they? They are nice.
Yeah, they're good.
Oh, I should have brought some in for the podcast, really, just to help us through a discussion of Ipswich Town 0, Burton Albion 0, and it wasn't very good. I didn't think, and I think that was what everybody came away with the opinion of yesterday.
No, Andy, it wasn't very good, was it?
No,
it wasn't very good at all.
Bad game of football.
I don't really know what else to say about it, to be honest, than that we've already said yesterday. Crap. Can I say crap? I have.
Sure. Yeah, you can. It's fine.
Loudest cheer of the day, 85th minute, was when the first shot on target was produced. Selina's shot sort of trundling through to the goalkeeper. That kind of summed it up, didn't it, really? A reminder of a lot of the dross that we've sat through at Portman Road in 16-17. Entertainment value did improve at the start of this season, but unfortunately it's kind of slipped back to where it was in the last few weeks. I think I had to check this when someone pointed it out, but that's one goal scored by Ipswich in their last six home games now.
That is appalling. That's 9 hours of football, isn't it? To score once in 9 hours at home.
What was that? The Selina rocket against Leeds, which kind of got them out of jail against Leeds. So, just another sense of just when you think the blue touch paper could potentially be lit with Ipswich, things always seem to kind of fizzle out. And we've had so many of these false dawns where we've tried to feel that there's a potential bit of momentum just about to be built and it all goes flat. And boy, was it flat yesterday. The whole atmosphere was just sterile, and that's no criticism of the fans that were there. They need to be given something to get behind, and they were given absolutely zilch to get behind.
And the total of the fans that were there equaled the lowest Portman Road League attendance in 20 years, and I think that's the worrying thing of it all, isn't it? Because some of those won't be coming back.
No, how often has it been, whether it's been what sort of seemed to be built up as a big occasion? Mick McCarthy said it's a huge game, we need to build upon the Sunderland win and lay down some good foundations going into this Norwich game coming up next weekend. How many times do we kind of sense that there's a big game there for Ipswich, for whatever reason, be it on telly, be it a cup game, be it a chance to build some momentum, and it always seems to kind of fall flat just when, you know, on those sort of occasions, games when they've been on BBC in front of a larger audience. It just never seems to quite happen for Ipswich on those sort of occasions, and Saturday was another one. It was kind of reminiscent to me watching it. Felt a bit like that England-Iceland debacle in the Euros, where they just seemed to be sort of frozen. Under perhaps it was the fear of being the firm favourites and everything that was expected of them, but they were just completely passive from start to finish. And perhaps as the moans and groans started from the crowd, the pressure rose. Burton were okay, they were decent, they played above their current position. But people aren't going to buy into Mick McCarthy's sort of really bigging them up and false position and all the stuff that he normally talks about, because to give it context, they lost five in a row coming into this. They've been beaten threes, fours, fives, sixes this season.
There's 30 games of evidence there that shows they are the worst team in the Championship. Mick was, you know, he praises people that he thinks deserves praise, and he did that with Burton and Nigel Clough pre-match and post-match. But there's a large body of evidence that shows they're the worst team in the league, and Ipswich didn't treat them like that yesterday.
No, I don't know what it was yesterday. You know, they didn't really. To me, the players need to take a hefty chunk of responsibility for yesterday's performance. Mick picked the team that I think most fans would have picked, or near enough. Selina back in instead of Sears. Okay, Carter Vickers playing instead of Webster's the only really slight contentious point, but
he played quite well.
He played quite well. No problem there. He's, you know, and I understand why they're keeping Webster probably treading carefully with him given his injuries. But the rest of the team, it's balanced. It's fairly attack minded. The four up front, the players, once they cross that white line, they need to take a bit of responsibility for the decision making and standing up and being counted. And there was no one really trying to grab the game by the scruff of the neck, really. When things aren't going your way in a game scenario, that's where you need one or two people to want the ball and to you know, go and scream for it off the centre backs and then, you know, give it go. You know, I keep harping back to Jim Magilton and someone that would lead by example and inspire others through actions. You know, they've obviously got a fantastic leader in Luke Chambers in terms of vocally. I don't know if there's enough people that lead through actions, and central midfield is an area that we keep coming back to time and time again over recent years. And I think yesterday was another example of where they were lacking with a midfield general that could really sort of get everybody else going.
An off day for Connolly, it must be said. He's been very, very good this season, but I think the last actual two or three games, maybe he's showing signs of tiredness, maybe. I don't know. It's a new role for him in the middle of a championship midfield. You can't go a whole season being pushed every week like he's been.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. He's been, you know, we have waxed lyrical about how much he's been a revelation in midfield, and I think he's got a bright future there, Connolly. The Cole Skuas debate rumbles on. New contract for him, of course. Fantastic character off the field. Been a fantastic professional, great servant to the club. We keep having this conversation about him, don't we? Does what he brings to the team, which is evident in terms of most interceptions and a shield for the back four and just understatably can break up play and treat the ball with care, but is all of that outweighed by the lack of the offensive part of the game? You know, a goal scoring record which is next to nothing, one goal every 18 months or so or whatever, never really looks like creating something or playing a killer pass. So that debate continues to rumble on. I think we talked about it yesterday that Cole Skuas is probably better suited to a midfield three and a balanced midfield three. And I think, to be fair to Mick McCarthy, I think going into this season, his midfield three in mind, and he said this, would have been Skuas, Hughes and Adeyemi. They were the three that he wanted, and they would have all had very set roles in there. It would have been a balance. You'd have had Skuas the protector. Adeyemi would have been the box-to-box physical energy, and that would have allowed Hughes to be the creator-in-chief. And that would have been a decent balance to a midfield three, I think. But obviously, injuries have robbed Mick of two of those players, and we're back to the situation of last season where you've kind of got two holders slash destroyers. Connolly's probably a little bit more than that. Maybe I'm being a little bit unfair to him.
He's got a bit of driving him forward, hasn't he? Yeah. A forward run, and he likes to shoot.
He does, yeah. And yesterday, you're right, was an off day for him. But when that side of the game's not happening for him, that kind of, you know, once again highlighted that there was a lack of creativity and the forward players weren't being given a great deal of service. But listen, it was an off day for everybody, really, wasn't it? Everyone, mistakes seem to breed mistakes. One player would pass the ball out of play or misplace a pass, and that seemed to be infectious, and it kind of snowballed as the crowd kind of got a bit frustrated. Maybe that then affected the players further, and just one of those days, wasn't it, where just everything didn't really quite go right.
Should we just quickly hear from Mick? Do you want to hear from Mick, Stu?
Go for it.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's probably the worst game here all season. Our worst performance when I consider how we played and won games early on in the season. So yeah, it was tough, but everybody else has been asking me, why do you think that is? I said, well, maybe the opposition had a bit of a bearing on that as well. I thought they played well.
Frustrating that you couldn't back up last week's performance and result, really.
Of course, yeah, of course. At the end of it, though, you just make sure you don't get beaten. We didn't play well at all. It was a tough game. They've they have made it really hard for us today.
Do you put it more down to the way Burton played that prevented your, you know, the lack of shots and attempts on goal was more to do with them than your two?
I think it's always a combination of both, isn't it? I'm not going to blame any one thing, but I would imagine Nigel's coming in and thought their team's played well and he's acquitted themselves well, so I think you have to give some credit to them, but no, we were disappointed. It's a poor performance by us.
You're the one, Mick, that kind of gets the booze and the stick when you come off at the end, but do the players need to take a bit of responsibility today, sort of? Firm favourites?
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Firm favourites, yeah. That doesn't do us any favours at all. And we get two goals last week at Sunderland, and we can sit in and we can catch them on the break and make sure it's tough for them to play against. I thought they did that to us today, certainly in the second half. I'm more than cool to get a stick for the team performance. I would say that there are times when we make some of the decisions we make with the ball or some of the final passes, but they're my players, so my responsibility, I'm cool with it. If it takes it off them, I've no problem.
There is that debate, isn't there? Is this on Mick, who does take a lot of the heat, and he's cool to take that heat? He says he's cool to take it, or should it land on the players? But every workplace, you have an off day at work, but football's different, of course, but to have your entire workforce having an off day is a bit odd, isn't it? Like in our business, not everybody comes in and has an off day all at once. Strange. Football's an odd game.
Yeah, it is. I have sympathy with Mick yesterday, and Mick's brought a lot of problems upon himself this season. He started off the year talking about winning back hearts and minds after 16-17, for a man who has been trying to kind of do that, he's gone a funny way about doing it. I think the comments after the Burton away game would probably kind of sparked all of that, you know, having a real dig back at fans. And he's continued to kind of be quite defensive and dismissive with his comments. And I think a lot of the damage this season has been more to do with what he said rather than how the team has played. But yes, I do also have, on the other hand, I had sympathies with him yesterday because, as I touched upon earlier, he picked the team that many would have picked, and I think his players let him down a bit yesterday. And you know, he takes a lot of the flack and a lot of the stick that comes his way. And for someone who's very loyal and very protective of his players, and you know, and that they all love him as a man manager and, you know, speak the world of him, I thought they kind of let him down with the performance yesterday. If, you know, if that's meant to be them showing that they want him to stay in the week where he's talked about potentially staying on longer, wasn't really a performance that looked that way yesterday.
Should we talk about a couple of positives? Because if you look hard enough, you might be able to find some. But again, he saved a point as bad as yesterday was, it could have been a lot worse had he not kept that late header out. Have we decided if that was McFadden or Chambers who got on the end of that?
Hard to tell from the replay still, isn't it?
I think it was Chambers.
I think it might have taken the last touch, may have been off Chambers, but a fantastic reaction save at his near post. It was a last minute brilliant whipped corner, wasn't it? And that was rocketing towards the top corner. He'd made a decent one-on-one save with his legs from Darren Bent as well in the second half. You shudder to think where Ipswich may have been in the last 18 months without him and the saves that he's made. We've said this before in a podcast, it's slightly disconcerting when your goalkeeper's picking up star man so often, you know, two times player of the year, potentially could be three times player of the year in a few months' time, and that's not a particularly good sign of where you're at as a football club, is it? As good as he's been. You don't really want your goalkeeper getting all the accolades.
No. But my man Muzzy as well. He looked all right when he came on. With a cheeky laugh.
He did, yeah. That was one of the other few bright spots, I thought. He at least injected a bit of pace and a bit of directness. And
he loves to shoot.
He sent a rocket into the side netting, which for a split second, I think a few people thought was in the top corner. So he's staked a bit of a claim, I think, ahead of the derby next week. And you had a chat with him after the game, didn't you? And I think he's very much looking forward to his first taste of that fixture. Mm. So it'll be an interesting one to see if he gets any game time next week.
Let's hear a bit of Muzzy now. Why not?
Looking forward now. You've got your first taste of the East Anglian derby coming next weekend. Is that a game you've watched before? You know anything about that?
Yeah, it's always on Sky, so everybody knows a lot about it. Tempo's good, atmosphere's unreal. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We're going to prepare for it like any other game. Obviously, it's a day for the fans, so we're going to try our best to put in a good performance, and hopefully we can get a win.
You must have played in plenty of derbies over your time at various clubs. What are your derby memories from other clubs?
Can't really remember much, to be fair. Scored in my debut for Leeds. I was Rotherham. I don't kind of a derby, so to say. But for me, it's just any other game. I think obviously the tempo is going to be high. Everything, so you just got to try and keep a cool head and play your game. Like, you can't really rise to the occasion, because then you won't play to the best of your ability. So you just got to try and keep a cool head and try and enjoy it, which is the main thing. When you enjoy it, you play your best football. So for me, I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to the atmosphere and see what it's really like.
Let's fire the starting gun on Norwich, Stu. We're recording this Sunday, a week out from the second East Anglian derby of the season, and really, this is the start of the battle of 12th and 13th, the mid-table classic.
Yeah, it is this year, isn't it? I said prior to this weekend that I thought the results of Ipswich and Norwich would go a long way to determining the mood going into it. Well, Ipswich are going to be bitterly disappointed with their performance and a point at home against rock bottom Burton. And Norwich, you would think, will be feeling good about themselves to come from behind, having already missed a penalty, to come from behind and get a draw at high-flying Derby. And they're on a decent little run of results at the moment. I kind of said in a web chat or something recently that it always feels like Norwich seem to always just be timing their run of form going into these games. I just had an email from someone this morning, and apologies, I can't give them a name check because their name escapes me at the moment, but he picked up on that comment, and he sent me the form of the two teams going into the derby, stretching back out since the last time Ipswich won this fixture, which is going back some time, and it does back it up. Norwich always seem to be on a decent run going into these, and Ipswich not so much. So I didn't think there was a lot between the teams going into the last fixture. I thought the game sort of backed that up. Two mid-table sides at the moment. But as I said in a video yesterday, if you're a Norwich fan, at least you kind of feel that you're at the start of a new journey. There's a new project with Daniel Farker and Stuart Webber behind the scenes and recruiting players from Germany. And okay, they've lost a few of their bigger earners and stuff, but you know, at least they're trying. There's evidence of a plan, perhaps in progress there at Norwich. And Ipswich, unfortunately, feels a bit like we're at an end of an era at the moment. There's certainly no sense of a plan coming together, with a team sort of put together of loan players and short-term signings and all the rest of it. And very much this sense of treading water, Groundhog Day, all these phrases that we keep using, sadly.
It does all feel very ominous heading into next Sunday, and I'm sure we're going to touch on that plenty more over the course of this week. We'll be back with another podcast looking ahead to the Norwich game with some of our friends from Norfolk, which I'm sure will add a new perspective to all of that, and we'll be hearing from all sorts of people in the lead up to the game. We'll leave the Norwich chat there and move on to something a bit lighter, a bit more happy.
Sounds good.
Stu, we've been joined by the boss. The boss is here, head of sport, Mark Heath. How are you doing, Mark?
That's Mr. Heath to you. Thanks, Warren.
Sorry. Welcome to the podcast. Your first appearance in some time.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Yep.
Feels good to be here.
It's taken a while. Have you been watching the Winter Olympics, Mark? Because I have. I spent all morning watching speed skating yesterday.
I'd be lying if I said I had been watching it, but I have watched it in the past, so I know roughly what we're talking about.
Stu, big fan?
Would probably be overstating it. I'm yet to tune in, but I'll probably catch a bit of the curling or something at some point.
Mm, that captures the heart of a nation, curling. I've been having some thoughts about how the Ipswich Town squad might compete in the Winter Olympics.
Okay.
curling is actually at the forefront of those thoughts, and I've nailed down my curling team. Skipper of the curling team, without a doubt, is Cole Skews. I can just see him sliding down the ice, stone in hand, releasing it to a sweeping team of Freddie Sears, hard work, works for the team. Grant Ward scuttles up and down with his brush, and that's the curling team.
Skews just blocking the shots of the other team all the time with his stones. That's
intercepting
what he does.
The stones on the way down. Yeah, I can see that. I can see those three forming a quite formidable curling side.
What makes a good curling side?
Well, you're asking the right person. Poise,
precision,
and just a calm head.
Yeah,
and that's Cole Skews. I can just see him with a glare on his face, sliding down the ice, releasing his stones. Job done.
It's one of those sports, isn't it, that no one cares about for like 4 years, and then you see it on TV again. And we're actually quite good at curling, aren't we? And we've got some decent teams, and then everyone's up in arms saying how good we are at it. But yeah, I'm sure it's a very skillful sport, but I can't profess to be a knowledge.
I like your logic though of the town team. Yeah.
Can you see any other Olympic sports crying out for an Olympic?
I thought you might be going down this route, Andy.
Yeah.
Who do we have? Joe Garner, ice hockey. He'd be well up for the fighting element, I think, of ice hockey.
I spoke to my brother about this last night, actually, and first thing he said was Joe Garner, ice hockey.
The
only sport on earth where they like, practically encourage fighting, the refs don't get involved, do they? Just let them get on with it until someone's face down on the ice and they stop it.
I think Joe Garner actually would suit the Winter Olympics all round. I could see him doing the luge as well.
Yeah.
Just because it's just unnecessary and hard.
Is that where you go down like on your front on the tee tray?
Yeah.
That's skeleton, isn't it? Luge is the cool runnings. That's bobsleigh.
Yeah, that's bobsleigh. We could put together an Ipswich Town bobsleigh team, but there's a lot of, probably the powerful runners. You know, Freddie Sears would probably get a role in there.
Dom Iorfa would be on there, I reckon. Long legs.
Yeah.
Pushing.
What about like cross country skiing? Who's the fittest member of town's team? Luke Hyme runs
Callum
a lot.
Connolly.
Freddie Sears again, surely.
Yeah, Freddie Sears at the Winter Olympics. I don't know if you can ski or skate, Freddie, but if you can. Maybe have a look into it.
Absolutely.
I think Bertrand Salina would be okay in the speed skating as well, though, or possibly even the ice dancing. Actually,
the speed skaters are tanks, aren't they? I'm thinking more like Bartosz Białkowski as a speed skater. They've got thighs like tree trunks, and they're all about 6'5" tall.
Maybe not Bertrand then.
Maybe not Bertrand. It's all about power, I think. Speed skating.
Get Zanti in the figure skating.
What, solo or?
If we're going to put him in with a team, I think maybe McGoldrick and Teddy Bishop, the three of them, doing some, some nice little silky moves.
Can you do three in a figure skate?
No idea.
I like it though.
I like the idea.
There must be some role for Bart in this as well.
As I say, the speed skating, I reckon. Or he'd be good at the bobsleigh, wouldn't he?
Mm.
The what do you call it? The guy who powers the sled.
The guy at the back.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Who's going to be the mentalist that does the big high, you know, the...
Ski jumping,
yeah.
Oh, man.
Probably Joe Garner again.
That is nuts.
Jonas Knudsen.
Yeah.
Danish as well, so he's definitely good at winter sports.
Jonas the Eagle.
Yeah.
I like it. Bart the Eagle. That nearly happened, didn't it?
Yeah.
Crystal Palace.
Of course, yeah.
I see what you've done there. Biathlon. That's the one with the guns and the ski.
And the cross country. No. Maybe Waghorn because of his
dead eye shooting
and
lots of energy.
Yeah,
like it. I prefer this chat to talking about yesterday's game.
Yeah, it's a bit lighter.
Thanks
it's definitely
not,
more cheerful.
Thanks for not including me in that, by the way.
You also weren't there, which is a good which is good news for you.
Yeah,
not so good, but you do have thoughts on football and things that should be in our football room 101. So let's go back to the football, away from the Winter Olympics. Mark, your first submission to Football Route 101, what should be stamped out of the game?
I've got a lot of thoughts about this, and there's quite a few, but for the first one, I'm going to go with diving / play acting / generally being an embarrassment to the male race. It's one of the main things that puts me off about football now, and I don't really know when it started. I can't remember from my youth, because I'm sure it wasn't around when I was a kid, But now you see it in every Premier League game, don't you? I don't know how often you see it in the Championship, but players dramatically going down when they've been brushed, like they've been punched in the face with a brick, that sort of thing. It's just embarrassing. I don't understand how they can look at themselves in the mirror the next day or even go back into the change room. And, you know, it's just embarrassing as a man to be diving around like that. Contrast it, I know this won't go down very well, say this in a football podcast, but contrast it to the rugby example yesterday. Wales, England, a war of attrition, guys with bits coming off them, blood all over their faces. There's no rolling around on the floor there, though, is there? Just get on with it.
On the subject of diving, actually, and with Norwich in mind, there was a bit of a diving chat yesterday at Pride Park.
Was there?
Yeah, Gary Rowett and James Maddison got into it after the game. Well, I don't know if it was after the game or during. There was a bit of a touchline Barney, I think. And then after the game, Gary Rowett was asked what he said to Maddison. And apparently Maddison said to him, show me on the video a time that I've dived. And then Rowett replied, well, I'll show you several.
Okay.
So, wow.
We've got a diver.
Yeah.
Got a canary diver.
It's this kind of accepted now in football to kind of, oh, he's got every right to go down there, which that winds me up. But it's more the, when you look back on replays and guys sort of intimating they've been punched in the face and they've been brushed lightly across the brow and they've gone down, like I say, as if Mike
Tyson.
Yeah,
that's a different debate, isn't it? The whole sort of diving in the box to try and gain your team an advantage of a penalty and all of that. I can just about understand with the amount of money and the pressure at stake that people trying to get their team an advantage. But when it's like doing 100 different rolls on the floor to try and get a red card, you know, that is embarrassing.
It's just embarrassing. It's bad for the sport as well because, you know, I like football and I watch that and I think, God damn, why are we watching this? It's ridiculous. So how's that for someone who's new to the game watching it? It's just embarrassing, as I say. It's just one of those things that winds me up to the point of wanting to put my fist through a wall whenever I see it.
For context, you are a fighting man, aren't you? Fist through walls is your bag.
Yeah, fighting sports are my bag, so maybe I've got a different kind of angle and perspective on it. But it just winds me up, as you may be able to tell.
Mm.
The old legs ticking away and the hands are...
Do you know what winds me up? Unnecessary coloured football boots. And that is mainly pointing at defenders here. Centre backs, you're wearing multicoloured boots. Come on, this is not your art. Your art is heading and kicking.
This is par for the course now, isn't it? Like yesterday, I looked at the. This struck me that Burton had an array of orange, yellow, you name it, football boots going along. And you're right, it's centre backs and full backs now. What's that all about?
Can you still buy normal coloured football boots though? Because I go into my local Sports Direct or any other sporting themed shop that are available, and literally pretty much every single football that you see now is like bright pink, bright green, purple, orange. You know, there are very few what I'd call normal, old-fashioned, just black. Exactly.
David McGoldrick does it. I have my issues with David McGoldrick as a footballer, but boots-wise, he's... spot on.
Exactly.
Black boots.
As it should be.
Scoose does as well, doesn't he?
Does he?
I think so.
He's a proper footballer, isn't he?
Mm.
I think you should be allowed to wear outrageously coloured football boots if you're an outrageously good player. But your bog standard kind of League 1, League 2, Championship, as you say, player, again, that winds me up. Shouldn't happen.
Some of them even wear odd coloured, like one colour of one the other. I think that was a phase a couple of years ago. That's not good either.
Can't even find, let alone finding black boots. You can barely find leather boots now. They're all these sort of synthetic, plasticky, shiny boots now. You know, where was the joy with football boots for me was, you know, giving them a good clean afterwards and getting the dubbing on them ready for next week. And
dubbing.
Yeah.
What's the dubbing?
That's like a... I don't know how to describe it. You put it's like a Vaseline that you put on them to protect the leather.
Yeah. Blimey. Well, I don't remember that. I obviously didn't take good enough care of my boots as a kid. What is it now though? As well, you see the boots that have got like sort of inner socks that come up the. What's that all about? Yeah, have you not seen that?
Like a built-in ankle sock thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't shopped for football boots for some time, so I couldn't tell you about those. But that sounds awful.
Pretty soon they'll just be full on leggings with some boots attached at the end.
Knee high. We look forward to that. Well, they will certainly be in Football 101.
Absolutely.
Hopefully before it even starts. Last week, a resounding victory for the appalling state of football stadium toilets over Stu's suggestion of poor abbreviations. I'm catching you up, Stu. But we'll put a poll out from this week's one. Mark versus myself. We'll see which one gets in. So give that a vote online. Thank you all for listening, of course, from me, Mark and Stu. We'll be back later in the week with another podcast looking ahead to the Norwich game. You can catch all of our action and reaction online at eadt.co.uk and it's star.co.uk as well as the Facebook page. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and now on Spotify, which is good news for Spotify users. Get yourself on there and we'll see you next time.